I really am quite pleased to participate in this shiur, or in this program this morning, sponsored by the Vad L'Chizuk HaTorah. It's really a wonderful effort on the part of a number of Balabatim to really spread Torah to the general Queens community at a time which is a secular holiday, and people have other things that they could be engaged in, and yet they come to learn and hear shiurim. I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I only hope that, you can't preach to those who are here, but I hope people who are not here can hear my words. They should be coming, because it's such a wonderful program. First of all, I just want to mention concerning the speaker today, Rabbi Breidowitz, on a personal note, Rabbi Breidowitz and I go back many, many, many years. We grew up together in Hartford, Connecticut. Today there is no Jewish community in Hartford. It has migrated to West Hartford, where I believe Rabbi Breidowitz's parents still reside. But in those days, we lived next door to each other, and Rabbi Breidowitz, he and his brother together were rising stars, really. I have very fond memories. Whenever I mentioned to my father, when I brought Rabbi Breidowitz to speak in Rochester, and I mentioned it to my father, his eyes were glowing, and he felt very good that a boy from Hartford, one of the Hartford boys, has really made it on the so-called national scene. And there is no doubt that Rabbi Breidowitz has really, really made a name for himself within the Jewish world. And he's clearly a Talmud Chacham. He's articulate. And it's a real Kiddush Hashem that he has decided to dedicate his life to Torah, and to in such a way as to be Marbitz Torah, and to speak in crowds across the country. And it really, really was a big hana'ah that I had. I'm a little older than Rabbi Breidowitz, and I had such hana'ah listening to him speak today, as I did when he spoke in Rochester. I just want to say a few words of introduction concerning the topic this morning, that being Shalom Bayis. You know, when we put on our tefillin every day, so we say a few psukim when we wrap the ritzua around our finger. We say ve'erastich li la'olam, ve'erastich li b'tzedek v'nishpat v'chesed v'rachamim, ve'erastich li be'emuna v'yadatu es Hashem. And this is a statement in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a sense, feels betrothed to his people, to call Yisrael, and it's an eternal relationship. La'olam. The question which I heard, which was once raised, is why is it that the Pasuk in Hosea uses the term Erastich to refer to an eternal relationship? Because we know Erisin is only the first stage in the relationship between a husband and wife. It's only consummated with Nisuin. So why is it that the term Erisin is used? But I believe the answer may be that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying to Kol Yisrael is that when a husband and wife, a man and woman, when they get married and they have the first stage of the marriage, the Erisin, there is a tremendous amount of enthusiasm that exists between the two parties. A tremendous amount of love, a tremendous desire to give. They're both riding high, they're both in seventh heaven, and they love each other and they care for each other. The problem is, what happens a few years down the road when they've been together for a while? And then all of a sudden, all of that feeling of desire to give and the caring and the loving, it's all compromised by so much of life's experiences and challenges that exist between two people attempting to live together. And so therefore, what does it say in the Pasuk? Erastich li la'olam. Right now, Bishas Erisin, there is a wonderful relationship. My only hope is that La'olam, it should always be like the Erisin. Even after the Nesu'in, even after many, many years. But what should happen? The relationship should grow so that it should be even better than it was Bishas Erisin. And indeed, that's exactly the way Rav Dessler explains the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel that we had just recently in Chanukah. Because Beis Shammai says, when you light Hadlokach Neros Chanukah, well, how do you do it? In a descending order. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Beis Hillel, what does he say? In an ascending order. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What's the machlokas? So Rav Dessler, Zechon Levracha, explains that according to Beis Shammai, the Takonas Chacham of Hadlokas Neros Chanukah was corresponds to the Hamona, your average person. Your average person's observance, an expression of his observance vis-a-vis Torah, is a superficial one. It's an external one. It's chitzonius. So what happens? When you start, you're very enthused. You're very excited. Chanukah! Wow! Fantastic! So what happens? Second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day. All of that emotion, all of that enthusiasm begins to wane. By the time the eighth day comes, it's over. So what happens? So Beis Shammai says, on the first night you light 8 candles. Because you're so excited. You feel so good about it. Seventh day, well, we lost a little bit. Fifth day, we lost a little even more. Until we come to the last day, all we have is 1 candle left. But Beis Hillel says, no. Takonas Chacham of Adlokas Neros Chanukah corresponds to the Yechidim, to those individuals whose observance is rooted in Pnimius. It's an internal expression of their feeling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you feel that way inside, what happens? So the feeling grows. The more you engage in an observance, the stronger you feel towards that observance. Emotionally, you feel more attached. And so therefore, you're adding a candle every day, not subtracting a candle every day, because your feeling is stronger than it was on day one, because you're so involved. That's true in Torah. People, unfortunately, become enthused, and then with the passing of time, they lose a lot of that enthusiasm. And unfortunately, the same thing holds true with a marriage, with Shalom Bayit. A young couple get married, and they're so enthused. There's nothing they wouldn't do for each other. But unfortunately, as time passes, in many cases, that doesn't continue. And then we have problems, and there's a struggle, and there's a machlokes, and there's a disruption in the Shalom Bayis. I've always said, Shalom Bayis, the longer two people are married, the better it should be. Really, if life is being lived in a proper way, if it's a pneumistic kind of commitment, and the longer two people are together, and the more they share with each other, if they really appreciate the gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu have given to each other, namely that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave each one his respective spouse, the feeling should grow, and it should even become better, and Shalom Bayis should become stronger. That's the challenge. That's the hope. It requires clearly a great deal of effort. Great deal of working on the part of every person in order to bring that about, but it's clearly worth it because the benefits are immeasurable. So today, Baruch Hashem, this topic is being discussed, and Rabbi Breidowitz, I know, will have a tremendous insight into this subject, and hopefully will be able to share with us ways in which perhaps we can indeed increase this emotion as we continue in this thing. So without further ado, I present to you once again Rabbi Breidowitz.
Thank you. It's certainly a thrill to have Rabbi Sokolov introduce me. We did go back many, many years, and my memories are very, very fond, and Rabbi Sokolov was a great mashpia. Even then, when I first saw that he would be speaking before me, I thought, gee, they got a friend of mine to come from Rochester. I was very impressed. And then I discovered that, indeed, he's relocated a bit south. I hope the winters are a little easier here. I remember learning in fifth grade about Andrew Jackson, winning the Battle of New Orleans, which was a major battle in the War of 1812, and he won a medal for it. But the war happened, the battle occurred more than 3 weeks after the peace treaty was signed in Belgium. In those days, it took a long time for news to get from one part of the world to the other. Talk about winning the battle and losing the war. The war was over, and the battle was fought. People knew that things took time in those days. Today, we, of course, live in a world of instant gratification. We want things to be here now. It used to take weeks to get a letter from Baltimore to New York. And now, if we're sending a fax to China or to Israel, and it takes more than 25 seconds, we're tapping our fingers and wondering what takes too long. We live in a throwaway society, where if things don't work, we throw things away, whether they be telephones, whether it be marriages, whether it be babies, Rahman al-Islam. And yet, all of us know that anything that is valuable in life takes effort, takes work, takes struggle. That blessings do not come except to the degree that we work for them and we struggle for them. And certainly Shalom Bayis is no exception at all. There's a very interesting little comment the Ramban makes in Hakdamat HaShemos. He only says it in like five words. You would miss it if you didn't read it carefully. Where the Ramban points out that there were three miracles that occurred in the tent of Sarah Inanu. And the three miracles were there was a blessing in her dough. If you'd eat her bread, you would be satisfied. There was a ner galuk, me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. There was a candle that remained burning all week. And there was an anan, there was a cloud of glory over her tents. And that Rashi himself brings that, where Rashi says, that is why when Yitzchak brought Rivka into the tent of Sarah, his mother, the pasuk says, Vayinachem Yitzchak achare imo, Yitzchak was now comforted. Because all of those miracles, all of those manifestations of the divine presence came back when Rivka came into the tents. The Ramban points out that these three miracles of the tent of Sarah Imenu correspond indeed to three major miracles in the Mishkan. The blessing in the dough of Sarah Imenu corresponds, of course, to the Lechem Apanim, the showbread that was put on the Shulchan every Shabbos and was not eaten until next Shabbos. And yet it was warm and fresh. That's the bracha be'isa. The ner daluk, the erev Shabbos, the erev Shabbos, corresponds, of course, to the ner tamid, which burnt eternally. And finally, the anan over her tent corresponded to the anan ha'tava. And the Ramban says, what this means is, the Mishkan was nothing more than an attempt to imitate or duplicate the holiness that can exist in a Jewish bias. Sarah's tent is the holiness that every Jew can try to create in their home. We think the holiest thing that we have is the Beis HaMikdash. Not having a Beis HaMikdash, we identify it with the Beis HaMikdash Ma'at of the Beis HaKnesses. But the Ramban is teaching us that the real repository of the Shechina in this world is the holiness that is created in a bias, in particular through the relationship of Ish V'Yishtei, which Chazal say, Ish v'Isha, Shechina Shiruya b'Neihem. The man has the Yud, the woman has the Hey. I'll talk about that later, that's the Yud Hey. When the Shem Hashem is within them, you have the Shechina Shiruya b'Neihem. And everything else is just an imitation. As the Pasuk says, V'yasu li mikdash v'shachanti b'seichem, I will make for me a mikdash, and Hashem says, I will dwell in your midst. The Shechina is not in the building. The Shechina is in the heart and soul of a bias. And as the Ramban says, the entire Mishkan is nothing more than Shavu L'maylas Avaisam, to try to return to the level of the Avos, and in particular, the Ohel of Sarah. A friend of mine, in fact, Rabbi Franz, once remarked that when he once saw his parents fighting and arguing over a minor matter years ago, he asked his parents, as kids sometimes do, are you going to get divorced? You know, kids worry. And his mother responded, Jews don't get divorced. That's not something Jews do. Jews work it out. Of course, as years went on, and more Jews were getting divorced, the answer had to be reformulated. Well, Jews get divorced, but frum Jews don't get divorced. But eventually, that had to be redefined as well. Because frum Jews get divorced as well. And unfortunately, we live in a society where not only is divorce reaching relatively epidemic proportions, although much less than general society, but even when couples don't get divorced, We have a lack of shalom bayis. We have machlokas. We have animosity. We have resentments. We have rejection. Sometimes it even erupts into things like physical abuse. Sometimes, again, it's a hidden secret and a very, very disgraceful and tragic phenomenon in the Jewish community. But even when it does not erupt into something like abuse, but still, there is not as much shalom as we would hope, and as a result, the Shechina is not in Klal Yisrael as much as it should be in order to bring us to a level of Geula. The truth of the matter is that, therefore, it's very, very significant that we try to examine what the Torah wants of us in our marriages and how that impacts directly on our Avodas Hashem. Let me start from the beginning. If you look in Parshas Bereishis, the Torah says Adam was created by himself, and Hashem said, Lo tov, it is not good. Lo tov, heyos ha'adam levada. It is not good for a human being, for man to be alone. Esalo ezer kenegdo. Let me make a helpmate to the opposite. Now we know, Chazal teaches, it's a machlokas in Midrashim, machlokas in the Gemara, who was this Adam that existed in a state of levada? Was it Adam? Was it a man? And woman came later? Well, Chazal bring a view that indeed man and woman came into the world simultaneously. Adam was a bisexual creature comprised of masculine and feminine components, a total person, as it were, combining both attributes. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Lo tov, it is not good. Lo tov, heyos ha'adam levada. So the Mefarshim asked the Kasha, what's so bad about being alone? After all, where is Adam HaRishon when that statement was made? He's in Gan Eden. He doesn't need someone to cook for him or clean for him. Everything is growing. Everything he wants is there. Why is it Lo tov, heyos ha'adam levada? And the tour at the beginning of Eben Ezer says a wonderful thought. The Torah says, because when the Adam is levada, he has the infinite capacity to take from the world. Everything that Hashem has is there for the taking. But lo tov, a human being cannot be a tov unless he learns to be a giver and not a taker. To whom does Adam give? An Adam levada can take in Gan Eden, but who can he give to? And since we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is called a Tov, a Hametiv, why is Hashem called a Tov? Because Hashem has nothing which we can give him. Hashem created the world just so he could bestow his goodness. And we are B'Tselem Elokim, we cannot be Tov unless we become givers rather than takers. So the real translation of Lo Tov Peyosa Adam Levado means an Adam that is Levado cannot be a Tov, cannot be good and godly, because he has not yet learned to give to another. So what the Torah says is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the divine institution of marriage not to satisfy human needs, but to give human beings a chance to become godly and noble by learning to give to another human being and not be concerned about their selfish, egotistical needs. The purpose of marriage, says the Torah, was not so that we should learn how to take, but rather we should learn how to become godly through giving. It's an amazing idea. If one would be makir, that the tachlis of marriage is to make me closer to Hashem by learning to be a less selfish person. And the question would become, to paraphrase John Kennedy, ask not what your marriage can do for you. Ask what you can do for your marriage. The divorce rate would plummet immediately. Because, in a way, all the difficulties that people have, they're not meeting my need, they're not doing this for me, but that's irrelevant. The tachlis and the avoda of marriage is to become a tov. We start off in life as a low tov, totally preoccupied with our selfish needs. And this is the relationship that enables us to become ennobled, kind, compassionate, empathetic. And in that sense, we transcend the selfish egotism and preoccupation with our own selfishness. And we become godly. This is why the Mefarshim say, marriage is called entering the Kahal Hashem. Right? Those who are not allowed to marry, the Torah says, Lo Yavo Kahal Hashem. Marriage is called Kahal Hashem. Because when one learns to be caring about another human being, One is involved in divinity. One is involved in the midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be a tov v'hametiv. And that is the lo tov hayosa adam levado. It's interesting, we say at a bris, Geshem shenichnas lebris, ken yikaneich la Torah ulechupa ulemasin tovim. As the child enters the bris, so may he enter Torah, chupa, and masin tovim. So people ask the kasha, the chronology is not quite in order. Torah is as soon as the child is three, he begins learning Torah. Masin tovim, the pashkus is bar mitzvah. So it shouldn't say chupa, which at a minimum is 18, and masin tovim, it should say masin tovim and then chupa. But the answer that's given is, it all depends how you understand the taich of masin tovim. If masin tovim meant mitzvos, you're right. First is masin tovim, and then chupa. But if masin tovim may refer back to the pasuk lo tov hayosa adam levado, how every single act of your life can become an act of hatava, an act of kindness, an act of compassion. That type of situation comes only after chuppa. Let me give you a very prosaic example. Let's assume a person likes cornflakes for breakfast, but one spouse likes Cheerios. Okay? All right. Now, there are certain things. Certain people like to ask shilas of everything, so indeed a Rav might get a shila, should I eat cornflakes or Cheerios for breakfast? But most of us would acknowledge that there are many areas of life in which perhaps the Torah is relatively neutral. And there's the Abishur doesn't care much if you eat cornflakes or Cheerios, provided it's kosher. So, when a person goes ahead and he decides what cereal I'm going to eat, what wallpaper I'm going to put on my walls, where I'm going to live, assuming all the neighborhoods are equally good, ruchniyistika-wise, that's not a matter in which there's either iser or heter, or that's a matter, or mitzvah rather, that's a matter of rishus. A person gets married. He marries someone who likes Cheerios. The first time he goes into a supermarket and he instinctively reaches for the cornflakes and then pulls himself back and says, wait a second here, my wife likes Cheerios. And he either chooses the Cheerios or he puts two boxes in the shopping cart. He has done a holy act. He has done an act of ruchnius. Because in making that mundane decision, he has emulated the midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is a tayv v'hamidah. That which was neutral, that which was insignificant, that which was unimportant and trivial, has now become an act of chesed, an act of compassion, an act of godliness. That is what we mean, masim tovim, where every single maisa that you do in your life has the potential to be a maisa of tov, to in other words, to be mesaken the lo tov hayos adam levado. That indeed is a level that, generally speaking, one is able to achieve only after chuppah. And that is why it says chuppah, and then it says masim tovim. That is what the Kahal Hashem says. Of course, it's not very easy to develop that type of midah, and it may take many years, may take a lifetime, and very often we never reach that particular midah. Rav Leib Chassman, the story of Leib Chassman, the mashmiach, the old mashmiach of Chevron, the great guy in Tzadik, who was Rav Shalom Shvadran, the Tzal's Rebbe, where he once met a boy who was eating fish in the yeshiva dining room in Chevron, and he asked the boy, why are you eating the fish so ravenously? And the boy responded, because I love the fish. So Rav Leib Chassman says, you mean something that you love, you chew and spit out the bones? If you loved the fish, you would put it in the water when it was still alive and take care of it. You don't mean that you love the fish. You mean that you love yourself, and you're using the fish to self-gratify your desire for fish. A profound insight. We talk about love. We talk about romance. We talk about taking care, caring about another human being. But how often do we use other human beings, our wives, our spouses, our husbands, our children, our parents? We use them to satisfy what we need in life. As Rav Leib Chassman says, if one truly loves another, one's goal is to take care of them, to do what is good for them. That is the purpose of marriage. That is the Kahal Hashem. That is the Lo Tov Hayosa Adam Levado. That is the Masim Tovim that comes after Chuppah. In the modern degenerate society of which we are a part, very often love is confused with self-gratification. Very often we use the other person to service us and take care of us. And when that happens and they no longer serve their function, we spit them out with the bones. Whether that means divorce, or whether that means not talking, or whether it means just not relating with each other. Because it no longer serves our interests. And we have to think very much, what do we mean in this society when we talk about love? But Gessler writes that the shorish of ahava is hav, and hav is to give. It is through the giving that we learn to love another human being. Giving is both the cause of love, and it's also the result of love. And this is the love that we talk about in the marriage. As I said before, this is not an easy avodah. As Tom points out, look at the language of the ksuva. The ksuva itself says, Ana aflach v'aykir v'ezo. This is Aramaic. Ana aflach, I will work. The okir, I will cherish. The azone, I will support. So Rav Tam points out, the working seems to be related to the support. It should have said, ana okir, I will cherish. The aflach, the azone, I'll work and support. That's the economic part. Why does it say the aflach, I will work, before it says the okir? And the answer is very simple. This type of selfless love, of learning to care about another person, not merely as a means of satisfying your own needs, but intrinsically to be machsh of that person, it's not something that's natural to a human being. It takes work on that. Just like you got to work to make a living, you got to work to recognize the biokir as well. And the Maral makes the same point much earlier. When the Maral points out, everyone knows the famous Gemara in Saita, that kasha lezavgan to kriyas yamsa. It is as difficult to make a shidduch as it is to split the Red Sea. So the Maral says, what is the comparison of making shidduchim with the Red Sea? The Maral says, because they're exactly the opposite. The nature of water is to come together. And when Hashem split the water, he made a miracle that which normally comes together was separated. That's a nes keneged hateva. Teva hamayim lios mechuba. The Maral says, by a shidduch, it is teva ha'adam lios misbodet. It is the nature of a human being to seek isolation. Now the Maharal does not mean that it's the nature of a human being to be isolated and alone, because indeed human beings are social creatures, and we crave companionship and connection. But I would suggest what the Maharal means is, it is the nature of the human being to be preoccupied with looking after number one, to caring about what's good for them. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows a shidduch to happen on a proper foundation, the miracle of the shidduch is that the human being acquires a capacity to care about another person, even if one's own selfishness is not being served. And that is a miracle of the same magnitude as Kriyas Yamsuf itself. Because if Kriyas Yamsuf is the miracle of that which comes together being able to stand apart, the miracle of the shidduch is that which normally comes stays apart to come together in an emes dika, in a true chibur. So this is an avodah. This is not easy. This is not natural. But the Torah tells us this is the very, very purpose for the divine institution of marriage. Of course, there's a very interesting fringe benefit. I think we will find that the less concerned we are with whether our needs are being met, the irony is, the more likely we will see that what we need to get, we are getting as well. Because as we show the other, husband shows wife and wife shows husband, that we cherish them, that we appreciate them, that we need them, that we love them, then the recipient also opens up and gives to the other even more than they might be getting. So there's a certain paradox here. The more we are concerned with our selfishness, our needs, our ego, our wants, the less those wants are going to be satisfied. The more we open ourselves up to what the other person needs, then the more they will open up to what we need as well. And one lives a life of shalom. A tremendous avodah. It's an amazing thing. Shlomo Zalman Zatzal was zifter last year, and of the many, many amazing things that we heard about this dying in Sadek, to me at least, the most amazing thing was recounting of his wife's levaya, which had been over 10 years before, He said, you know, it's customary that you ask Mechila from the mace at Bulavaya. So he said, you know, it's customary that husbands ask Mechila from their wives and vice versa. But in our 50 years together, neither of us ever did anything to upset the other. And therefore, he was made. There was no reason to ask Mechila. Talk about something that is literally superhuman. And yet we find that if we open up our hearts to the other will open up our hearts to us as well. In the Sifrei Chassidus, it's brought down that this was allegorically or homiletically the meaning of the pasuk, Lo tov peyaisa adam levadai. I'm sorry, Al kein yazov ish es avi v'yasima. Right, the Torah says a person shall leave his father and mother, the davak v'yishto, and cleave unto his wife. So people ask the kasha, what do you mean, yazov es avi v'yasima? There's a mitzvah of kibud aviyeh. So in the Chassidus Svarim it says that when a person gets married, he has to forsake the attitude of the child vis-a-vis his parents. A child vis-a-vis parents is there to take. It's the parents' job to give, it's the child's job to receive. Far too often, we enter marriage with the attitude of the child. I'm here to take, I'm here to be catered to. And the Torah says, Yazayv ish es aviv v'es imay, abandon the attitude of the child towards the parents, the davak v'yishtei, and cleave unto the wife. Now this may sound, although it's very hard, but this may sound like basic marriage 101, the basic notion of learning to care for another, not to be selfish, to express appreciation, to express love, to show how much you care about the other person, even if that means your needs in the short term are not always going to be met. But it's interesting that Rav Anaseinu HaRavim, even in our greatest yeshivas, these are lessons that are sometimes not being communicated properly. I was told about a survey that was done about yeshiva students. What are they looking for? What are their goals in a marriage? What are they looking for? And, you know, the answers were frankly very, very astounding. Issues, I want somebody that will cook for me and do what I want, etc. They said this lesson, do what I want, listen to everything that I say. Is that the Avodah? You know, if you would have asked the Torah, is that why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the institution of marriage, where the Torah says, Beferish, that the tachlis of marriage is to teach us how to give and not how to receive. And it's only to the extent we become givers that we are able to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and develop the toe that is within us. And this is why the true love in a marriage, as Rabbi Sokolov said, often comes after the marriage. What does the pasuk say by Yitzchak? Yitzchak brought Rivka into the Ohel, and he married her, and then he loved her. And the reason is because a love that is based on your care and concern for another person only grows as you share life together, as you go through difficulties, as you go through the trials and tribulations and the joys of raising children, sometimes experiencing sickness, you know, building a home together. This just creates the kesher to be stronger and stronger as life goes on. You see, when love is based on selfishness and self-gratification, then indeed it may diminish, because a person might find that the different things they were seeking for, they're not always getting. But when it's based on genuine caring, it's only going to grow stronger, because the values grow through the shared experiences of life together. So this is really point number one, that our avoda in a marriage is to learn how to be a giver in life and not to be a taker, to learn to transcend egotism and selfishness. There is, however, a subtlety in learning how to be a giver, and that is, learning how to give requires learning how to take. And this is much more of a problem, I think, for men than for women, in the following sense. We've had a lot of talks in the Torah community and in the general community on feminist issues and the different roles of men and women, etc., the different makes the feminine identity and the masculine identity. But I think one thing can be said with some definiteness, that the fundamental difference between men and women is, do they stop and ask directions when they are lost? This is fundamental in Muskim. We know most men, I can't speak for everybody in the audience here, but most men, including myself, we are very reluctant to stop and ask directions when we're lost. We'll figure, you know, eventually, you know, the road goes around and we'll be where we have to go. Maybe after 3 or 4 hours, you know, we give in and we ask, etc. On the other hand, we also know that many of our wives are very, very anxious to ask directions, even before we leave the driveway. You want to check the directions. And why is this? Why is there this basic dichotomy that women like to ask directions and men don't like to do so? And it really comes back to a very basic idea of what is the definition of oneself. That the essential idea of the male is one of autonomy, one of control. And any reaching out to another human being is a weakness, a sign of vulnerability, a sign of failure. And thus, a man, again, this is just a generalization of Adar, there's a Yotzim and a Klal, but a man, generally speaking, does not like to reach out to others, because that is a concession of failure. A woman's basic sense of self is one that is, by definition, bound to others. In fact, I think Al-Pi Kabbalah, this goes back to Bria Sa'ola, because if you go like the opinion in Chazal, that first there was Adam, then there was Adam and Chava, a human being, a man, entered this world alone. And therefore the man's basic musag of identity is aloneness, as the Maral says. Teva ha'adam lios mispode, he's primarily referring to the man. When Chava entered the world, there already was an Adam. A woman had no sense in the world of being totally alone. The woman's definition of self is bound up to others. And thus, in relating to others, there is no contradiction to the self, because the self is bound up with others in a sense of community. In fact, it also goes back to pregnancy. Because a woman carries life. A woman is physically bound to another in a way that a male is unable to be. And therefore, if a man's essential sense of self is bound up with aloneness and aloofness and isolation, a woman's essential self is bound up with community. Again, this explains many, many phenomena, the difficulty of men in forming friendships beyond their immediate family, as opposed to women who have a much easier time, which is why, by the way, even psychological statistics show that although Chazal talk about a woman having a greater desire to marry than a man, but psychology shows that men who are not married do a lot worse than women who are not married. Men who are not married live lives to a large degree in the long run of loneliness and isolation in a way that women do not, because women have that sense of a community. In fact, one could even speculate, again, I don't want to give Tamei Dikra, that one of the reasons why, about women's minyanim, a whole big shaila, I know in Queens there's a very big shaila, I'm not going to address that, of course, but one of the reasons why Al Pi Din, women may not be form a minyan, might very well be that the tachlis of minyan is a mechanism for men to realize that we have to be mechaber to others. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in effect, tells the man, there are certain things you cannot do alone. You need to connect, you need to join, you need to be mechaber with others in order to achieve a certain level of avodas Hashem. Lo tov heyos ha'adam levado. Women who naturally understand the need of chibur don't have a compulsory institution of minyan, because those who don't need that particular institution are not given that particular institution. And that's why, according to halacha, the mitzvah of marriage is technically a mitzvah on the man and not the woman, simply because the man needs in many, many ways to be formed, to be told and to be informed that chibur is essential to one's shleimus in avodas Hashem. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, bangs men over the head with a 2x4 in many ways to remind them of the nechitzus of that type of chibur. What this means is the following. Because of this, very, very often, it is in the male's self-interest, or imagined self-interest, to be the one that is giving, to be the one to get the sense that they're providing, they're bringing home the parnasa, they're doing. And they don't open themselves to let their spouses give to them. And they could even have the false pride. I'm doing exactly what the Torah says. I am giving. I'm not taking. But one has to be makir that sometimes the greatest giving you can do to another human being is to be open to what they can give you. Because by allowing yourself to receive, by opening up the vulnerability, that gives the person the feeling that they're needed, that they're cherished, that they are contributing. Just as we say, the greatest chesed is sometimes not to be a no-saying, but to be a mekabel, because that allows the other person to feel that they are giving something to your life. And this is a very important point. I remember reading years ago in the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin, where Benjamin Franklin talked about the fact that how do you get somebody to like you? So Benjamin Franklin said, you don't get somebody to like you by doing them a favor, because doing them a favor, they're going to feel beholden to you, they're going to feel guilty, they're going to resent you because they feel they owe you something. You don't get somebody to like you by doing them a favor, and you don't get somebody to like you by asking them for a big favor, because then they'll feel resentful. But you get somebody to like you by asking them to do something for you that's easy for them, but that you appreciate. Because by being a makabel from them, they will feel good, and they will feel chashuv, and as a result, they will cherish you. So there is a certain subtlety that although we talked about the tachlis of marriage is to teach us how to give, but giving requires to be open, to be makabel, to be makir tov, and to be open and receptive for what the other person has to offer. In this sense, talking about the difference between men and women, in terms of men essentially see the world as isolated beings, and women see the world in forms of community. There actually was a very classic work on social psychology written by Carol Gilligan, a psychologist at Harvard University, was published over 10 years ago, in which she discussed the fact that even at a very young age, boys and girls made different moral judgments about situations. She posed this hypothetical. This was not a Jewish study, this was about general society, but it's very, very interesting. The question that was given to a bunch of children was the following. Let's assume you had a sick child at home, and the child might die, and the only medicine that could save the child's life is in a drugstore that is already closed. It's already at 10 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night. What do you do? So all of the boys answered, you take a rock, you break the window, and you take the medicine. Now, on one level, that's a very correct answer. There's no question that saving a life, pikuach nefesh, certainly in our terms, would override it. But she called this Jake's ladder. In other words, Jake had a ladder, because the ladder is you either go up or down. They only saw one possible thing. You either break the window and take the medicine and save a life, or you don't. It's yes or no. Well, obviously, if the question is yes or no, do you break the window or let the child die, the two alternatives are obvious, and you decide to break the window and have the child, let the child live. When the girls were asked the question, these were girls at the age of 7 or 8, they said, well, of course we have to get the medicine, but shouldn't we leave a note so the police will know who to call, or should we call the police first, or should we try to get the owner's number? In other words, the concept was, yes, there is a priority to save the child's life, but you don't disregard the other relationships that are impacted. You take everything into account. There is a certain sensitivity to relationships, to community, to ripple effects, to how other people are affected. And unlike a ladder, she called it Charlotte's Web. It's a pun. Charlotte's Web is a famous children's book. But she said that the women's approach to morality, even at a young age, involved a much more sensitive, nuanced approach to interrelationships. And therefore, indeed, part of the avodah of the marriage is for the man to become attuned to that mechitza, mechitzas of chibur, of interrelationship, of being sensitive. In fact, even the off-quoted statements are sometimes said in a derogatory way. Nashim datan halos, which literally means women are, well, literally, and again, please forgive me for my initial translation, women are lightheaded, actually has been interpreted in a very, very different way. To be kal is to be swift, and it refers to the capacity of the woman to simultaneously disengage from one task and be involved in something else. We know, for example, that men, we tend to be linear in the sense that when we are involved in one thing, we are locked into that thing. So that's why they say men are often better cooks, because a man will stand over soup for 6 hours and stir it to be sure that it's good. They will ignore the phone, they will ignore something else, because they're concentrating on that soup. A woman is datan kalos because there is the capacity to juggle many, many things at the same time. Kalos is the ability to disengage from one thing and go to another thing, then go to another thing, then go to another thing, then go to another thing, while men will be doing the thing well, but it's only one thing at a time. It's the notion of linear thinking as opposed to a more holistic approach, which again goes back to the ladder, which goes in one direction versus the web. So the point is, learning to give does not mean that the stance of a spouse in marriage here is, I'm here to give, don't give me anything that you have, I am here to provide everything. Rather, giving involves taking as well, because that fosters self-esteem, that fosters chashivas, that fosters hakaras hatov, that fosters appreciation. Let me go on to the next half of the pasuk. So the first half of the pasuk is, lo tov peyosa adam levado, and that's the Torah idea that levado, tov is the notion of becoming godly by learning how to give, learning how to take. But then the pasuk goes on and says, eshelo ezer kenegdo, let us make a helpmate to be opposite him. So Chazal already asked Patasha, there's a contradiction. Is a wife supposed to be ezer, helpmates? Or is a wife supposed to be kenegdo, opposite him, opposition? So the Gemara's answer is, well, it all depends. If you're lucky, if you're zaycha, ezer. If you're low zaycha, it's kenegdo. Sometimes it's ezer, sometimes it's kenegdo. But in the Sifra, sometimes the greatest ezer in marriage is the kenegdo. All of us like to have, really, very often, a clone. Right now we have human cloning down the road. Pretty soon you can clone yourself. Although cloning could not involve, a male could not clone a female clone of himself. But very often people feel that they want a marriage partner that sees the world exactly as they see it, that feels about things exactly as they feel. And when those feelings are not exactly the same, there's animosity, and there's resentment, and there's jealousy, and there's hurt. But sometimes, the Torah's Merameh says that it is precisely the divergent perceptions of the world. It is precisely the fact that each one brings to the marriage a different way of seeing things, a different way of approaching reality, that allows human beings to grow and to be challenged. We don't mean, of course, criticism that is offered in a hurtful way or in a derogatory way. But if it's in a spirit of love, it is precisely the creative tension within a relationship that allows there to be a whole that is greater than the sum of the parts. Just as was true with the Avos themselves. Look at Avraham. Avraham, who of course is known as the foundation of chesed, of loving kindness, needed Sarah in name to sometimes teach him that you need to be tough sometimes. Remember, Avraham could not send away a Yishmael. Avraham loved his son. How could he send him away? Chesed, the midah of chesed, didn't allow it. But it was Sarah that understood that in the long run, Yishmael would destroy Yitzchak and the future of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, Avraham's chesed needed to be counterbalanced with Sarah's gevurah. And Yitzchak, who is known to incorporate in his personality the attribute of inner strength and reserve, bedafka needed to be counterbalanced by a Rivka, who exemplified the outgoing midah of chesed. And the truth of the matter is, it's not merely Avraham chesed and Sarah gevurah, but through his relationship with Sarah, Avraham's necessary qualities of gevurah became manifested. And through Yitzchak's relationship with Rivka, Rivka was able to bring out his qualities of chesed, and he brought out the qualities of gevurah that Rivka needed. Meaning, each one brings out in the other those qualities that would be dormant and would be ignored, allowing a human being to become a complete human being that's an Ezer, that is truly an Ezer connector. The Gemara gives the story that when Rav Yochanan had Reish Lakish as a Talmud, and every time Rav Yochanan said something, Reish Lakish would ask him 24 kashas, and Rav Yochanan would have to answer. And Reish Lakish eventually died, and he was replaced by Rav Kahana. And whenever Rav Yochanan said something, Rav Kahana brought 24 rayas that Rav Yochanan was right. And Rav Yochanan started crying, and he said, "Alas for the loss of Reish Lakish." And the Talmidim said, "Why is the Rebbe crying? Rav Kahana gives you 24 reasons that you're right. That's wonderful." Rav Yochanan said, "Do I need somebody to tell me I'm right? If I didn't think I was right, I wouldn't say it. But when Reish Lakish challenged me and questioned me and made me rethink and made me go over and made me analyze and made me go through a cheshbon hanefesh, then I grew and my Torah became clearer and I was able to develop new insights." Well, that's a very similar idea of the Ezer Kenegdo. It is precisely the challenges that are offered in a loving and supportive way that allows us to become more than we were. Not simply a clone, not simply the same. If the tachlis is to be the same, then why get married at all? You know, there's a little toy you can get in an office supply store that I once saw. It's to be put on the desk of beleaguered executives, junior executives, and it's a wind-up toy that says, "You're right, you're always right, you're correct, and you're good." Because, you know, we need that support because our bosses often don't give it to us. Well, a human being indeed needs to hear words of encouragement. This is certainly a legitimate role, and it's one of the most wonderful roles that one could hope in Shalom Bayis and in a marriage. But we also have to recognize that there's an Ezer Kenegdo part of Shalom Bayis as well, where our spouse, husband or wife, is not only a clone, but to challenge us, to discuss with us, to bring up points when we might be wrong, and to give us the chance to learn and grow and become greater than we otherwise would be. That is the Kiddush. Well, I think it is reciprocal. In other words, the concept was, it is not good, in other words, Ezer Kenegdo might be mutual. I mean, it's not good to be without Ezer, therefore I create... Well, SLO might mean, remember that if I say do partsufit, so the low refers to the bisexual union. So in effect, I will take this one, make it two. So now you have mutual Ezer. But besides the fact, the truth of the matter is that certainly on one level, the Ezer Kenegdo is a mutual relationship. However, there is on a deeper level, the role belongs more to the woman, because indeed Chazal say that that is the gift of Bina Yisera. And the very fact that at least in a traditional sense, although it doesn't apply so much today, the woman was in the bias. This is an amazing thing. You know, it's so opposite of the mindset of modern society, which glorifies the workplace. You have to understand that in the view of the Torah, the need to go out in the markets and make a living is a curse. It is the curse of Bezeya Sapecha Tocha Lechem. And it is that curse that often takes away and clouds our spiritual judgment. And Chazal taught that those who are insulated from the markets, in an ideal sense, have a spiritual purity and sensitivity that allows them to assess the realities of a situation more so than those who are involved in the market. Now, of course, again, this man hazeh, the gavulim are metushtash, because women are in the market versus much men, etc. But in the ideal theoretical structure, indeed, is the woman that would have the superior judgment and all these other. Listen, it happens to still be true in many cases even today, in spite of everything. But so I think that the age of Kedegra is both ways, but there is a predominance in which the woman offers it to the man, precisely because of the bias. The bias is a makkah in which that judgment is not clouded. And this is the example, as they say, of the avos, and this is the chiddush of Ezer Kedegra. Let me mention yet another limud and another lekach that marriage teaches us. And that is, marriage teaches us the holiness of the ordinary, the holiness of even material existence. And here let me mention the Gemara that I mentioned before and give you the Maral's explanation on it. That's the Maral in his Sefer on Chanukah. All of us know, and I'm sure you've heard it, that countless Sheva Brachas, probably including the married people, don't Sheva Brachas here, that Ish V'Isha, the man gets the Yud, the woman gets the Hey. The Yud and the letter Hey are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. So when God is in the marriage, everything is wonderful. You take out the Yud and you take out the Hey, so you're given Eish, destructive fire. Without Hashem in the marriage, all there is dissension, machlokas, animosity, egotism, selfishness, taiva. Fire, of course, is just desire for self-gratification. It's a beautiful Gemara, but the Maral raises the question, if in fact these are the osios of Hashem's name, why does the man get the letter Yud and the woman get the letter He? In other words, why in that particular configuration? And the Maral quotes the Gemara in Menachos that says on the Pasuk, Ki b'ka Hashem, Sur Eilamim, that Hashem created the worlds, Eilamim, with the letter Yud and He. So the Gemara in Menachos says, Yud was the letter that created Olam Haba, and Hey is the letter that created Olam Hazeh. That's Kibakah Hashem Sur Eilamim. And the Gemara says why? Because Yud is a little point, and that represents the pure ruchnius of Olam Haba. Hey has a little opening on the upper left hand side because it's very hard to go up to do the right thing, and it's open at the bottom because it's very easy to be nichshal and fall through the bottom. But the Maral offers slightly different explanation of the Hay. He says, Yud is Olam Haba because it's pure spirituality. It doesn't have length, but intellect. Ruchnius. Hay, says the Maral, might be regarded as a composite of two letters. Dalet. Dalet is pure Gashmius, because Dalet is the four corners of the world, the four dimensions of matter, length, breadth, width, height, rather, and time, right, the four dimensions of matter. And he says it's a composite between Dalet and Yud. I would have thought Dalet was above, but he says Dalet and Yud. So what does it mean? Yud is pure Ruchnius. Hey is the ability to bring Yud into Dalet. What does that mean? He says a human being, the male aspect of a human being, tends to be corrupted by involvement in the world. The more we are involved in the world, we become corrupt, we become selfish, ego takes over, control, jealousy, etc. And therefore we become degraded and demeaned by our involvement in the world. And therefore a man's kesher to ruchnius, again this is a generalization, but a man's kesher to ruchnius involves a certain degree of separation from the world. We go to shul, we go to yeshiva, we go to a shir, we have to separate. Because the more we're involved in Olam Hazeh, the further away we get from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Bechina of Yud. A woman's capacity, says the Maral, is the ability to take spiritual ideas, the Yud, and be machnis the Yud into the Dalet, even into the physical. A woman can show, again, a generalization, a woman can show that taking care of children is an Avodas Hashem, an act of Kedusha. Achnasas Orchid, setting a table for Shabbos, creating an environment in the home. But here is the rub. The Maral says, part of the Ezer Kenegdo of a marriage is that the woman should teach the man. That's why it's not just a woman's thing. A woman should teach the man that there is holiness, not only in escaping from this world, but there is holiness in this world itself. This world, the mundane activities of carpool and diaper changing and setting a table and cooking for Shabbos, all of this can be acts of sanctity, acts of kedusha, acts of holiness. That there doesn't have to be a stira, contradiction between the physical world and the spiritual world. But you could be machnas, the yud, into the dalit. See the holiness of everyday life instead of letting the world destroy you. Now, it's very significant, though, that you might notice that mathematically, hey is only 50% of yud. What does that mean? In other words, does that suggest that when you bring the yud into the dalet, you lose something? Yes, it does suggest you lose something, but the loss is worth the gain. And let me tell you a word from Mefsadik. Mefsadik points out that by Matan Torah, when the Jewish people received the Aseres HaDibros, the Torah says, everybody saw kolos ubrakim. They heard the thunder, and they saw flashes of lightning. And then Hashem gave the Aseres HaDibros. And after the Aseres HaDibros were given, it says again, they saw kolos. But there's one little change. It doesn't say anymore, they saw kolos ubrakim, but it says they saw kolos velapidim, torches. A little change. And Rav Tzedek says, what is the significance of the change? That before Matan Torah, they saw lightning flashes. And after Matan Torah, they saw flickering torches. What's the nafkamina? And Rav Tzedek says, the difference in what they visualized represented a difference in the understanding of Kedusha pre-Matan Torah and after Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, there was a desire for Kedusha. But that Kedusha involved separating from the world. If you wanted to be holy, you disengaged, you became a hermit, you disengaged from sexual relationships, you took vows of poverty, you became an ascetic, removing yourself from the world. Rav Tzedek says, that Kedusha of disengagement is a brilliant flash of lightning. There's ecstasy, there's light, but it doesn't last. It turns into total darkness, because even the hermit has to eat sometimes, sleep, go down from the mountain, get supplies, go to the bathroom. And if holiness is only existing to the extent you disengage, then it's going to be a transient, ephemeral phenomenon analogous to lightning. Matan Torah was mechadesh, a new idea of Kedusha. That Kedusha does not have to involve disengagement, but Kedusha can involve transformation and elevation. We eat, but we can eat l'shem shemayim, l'shem mitzvah. That's why so much of the Torah is miyusar, on physical ceremonies of mitzvahs, where you take the physical and you elevate it. Rav Tzedek says, that type of holiness is not as ecstatic as lightning, because you're involved in all sorts of mundane things. But that is like a torch. What is a torch? A torch flickers. It's not as bright as lightning. It's not as dramatic. But a torch gives you warmth, it gives you light, it gives you guidance. If you have to navigate a twisted road, lightning is not going to allow you to do it, because you get lightning for a second, but then you don't know, the next inch I might fall off the cliff. The torch will give you the guidance to navigate the tortuous byways of life and not to fall within the pit. Rav Tzedek points out, there's a certain tragic compromise here, in effect, a daring statement, because he points out that the ecstasy of a relationship with God that is not encumbered by mundane life is a wonderful thing. It may last for a second, but it's a real high. The torch is not as bright as the lightning. The torch is not as exciting. It is not as flamboyant. It is not as dramatic. But we give that up because we have something that is lasting and enduring and permanent. And that, I would suggest, is exactly what the Maral is saying. Yes, a hey is not as flamboyant as a yud. But going from the yud to the hay is the identical transition of going from the lightning to the torch. Something enduring, something permanent, something you can hold on to, something you can pass by. And the Maharal is not at all making the point, therefore, that women should spend all their time setting the table and decorating the house. The Maharal's point is that part of the Ezer Kenegdo is that women teach men what it means to be human and what it means to live in the world and what it means to sanctify HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only by separating from the world, but by being actively involved and transforming the physical reality into something of Kedusha, into something of beauty. And this is the Ezer Kenegdo. This is the example of the lightning, and this is the Maharal's point regarding the yud and the hay. Let me just end with one final Maimer Chazal. This is a Gemara in Brachos. In fact, there's actually a book on Jewish marriage written about this Maimer Chazal. In fact, if you learned Daf Yomi, you had it recently in the Gemara about dreams. The Gemara says, if one dreams about a river, a kedera, a kettle, and a bird, and that's the name of the book, The River, the Kettle, and the Bird, so it says, Yitzapa l'shalom, a person can hope to have shalom bayis. A river, a nohar, a kedera, a kettle, or a tzipor, or a bird, Yitzapa l'shalom. And the Vilna Gaon explains that why is a river, a kettle, and a bird a symbol for shalom bayis? Because he says there are three levels of shalom that one can hope for. The basic level is river, the second level is kettle, and the third level, the highest level, is that of a bird. A river, what is a river? A river is a connecting point between two places. You've got two cities. You have Baltimore and Columbia, South Carolina. They're both on the Atlantic coast, or they're connected by a river. So it's simply a mechanism which is mechaber, two different things which have two different areas of activity. Well, the basic level of shalom bayis, the prerequisite, is civility. Husband does his thing, wife does her thing, there is a river, there is a connection between them, but each goes around their own business. That is the basic notion of communication, of connection, but there's still separateness. Each one is doing their own thing, living their own life. That is level number one. But then there is a higher level, which is called a kedera, that of a kettle. What's a kettle? Imagine fire and water. Fire and water, in effect, are opposites. If you put fire on top of water, the fire may either burn the water away, evaporate it, or the water may overpower the fire and extinguish it. What does the kedera do? The kedera, however, is a medium which allows fire and water to combine in such a way that together they can accomplish something new that neither of those entities could have done by itself. If you want hot water for tea, the fire can't get you the hot water and the water can't get you the hot water. But the kedera allows the fire to combine with the water. That's level number two. That's where husband and wife become a unit so that together they accomplish what each one individually could not have done. It's not simply, I do my thing, you do your thing, and we're together, we're friends. Although that's a nice level too. Even the basic level is nishkefela. Alvai, we should all be zocha to that. But then there is a level in which somehow each of us brings out something in the other, that we do things together in life that could not have been accomplished by each of us as individuals. By the way, Rashi and Ksuvas suggests that that is the chiluk between the sixth bracha of Sheva Brachas and the seventh bracha. The sixth bracha of Sheva Brachas, Misameach, Chasan, Vikala, Chasan should be happy, Kala should be happy. Misameach, Chasan, Imha Kala is the simcha that we get by doing things together, by developing in ways that we would not have developed by ourselves. But even that is not the highest level. There is a level in which we're not simply fire and water that are combined, but there's a level in which we literally become one. What is a bird? A bird, the Gra says, is a single organism. A bird is a single entity that is capable of flying in the sky and capable of living in the earth. That is the level in which the separate functions of husband and wife are no longer even regarded as separate, but there is such a unity, it is as if literally they are one person. They are one. In other words, each one is an extension of the other, each one does a separate thing, but they are combined as a single unit. It is said, Rav Aryeh Levin, it is said that when he would take his wife to the doctor when she was ill, he would always tell the doctor, our foot is hurting. It wasn't her foot. It was literally his foot as well. Our foot is hurting. And it is also said that after his wife died, his wife, by the way, was a remarkable tzaddikus in her own right. One could write a book about her as well. And she was a tzaddikus even before she married him. But the story goes that when his wife died, and he took a cab somewhere, he would not tell the cab driver. The cab driver asked him, "Where do you live? Where's your house?" And he wouldn't answer. He says, "Let me off here." And the cab driver says, "Where is your house?" And finally he said, "I don't have a house. I don't have a home. She was my home, and my home is not here anymore." That was the feeling. This was his bias. This was him. Our foot is hurting. That is the level of the bird. You know, they tell a bad joke, although the joke has some truth, about you walk into a restaurant, how do you know which people are married and which people aren't? And the answer is, if they're talking to each other, they're not married, they're dating. If they're not talking to each other, they're married. Well, similar to the story about Noah, Yesh Dorshin L'Shvach, V'Yesh Dorshin L'Gnai, the Mechilas Kavod of Chazal, I think you could take the joke also. And Yesh Dorshin L'Shvach, V'Yesh Dorshin L'Gnai. The negative meaning of that remark is, of course, once people are married, eventually they lose interest, they get bored with each other, they're not interested in talking to each other, and therefore they're just going through the motions, as opposed to the people who are trying to impress or whatever. But there is a positive way as well, and sometimes the positive might be true, that the relationship might be such that words maybe don't have to be necessary. Sometimes you can see this, you see a couple that's been married for many, many years, they can sit in a room without having to exchange any words. They know what each other's thinking. They know what each other is feeling. There's no need to break the ice because there's not necessarily a tension that has to be dispelled with an abundance of words. And this is the madrega that the Gra is talking about. When you reach the level of the bird, silence can also be a form of communication. Silence can indeed be the deepest form of communication when words do not become necessary. That's the river, the kettle, and the bird. Civility, self-transformation through creative and spiritual interaction, and ultimately the achieving of that unity where even explicit communication no longer becomes necessary. And you can see it. You can see it. You can see it sometimes. It's a gift. It's not something all of us will always be zochet to all the time. But there will hopefully be moments in each of our lives when we will try to experience that type of closeness on some level. I just end that I once heard from Rabbi Tauber in Muncie, a very interesting mashal. He says, imagine, one should imagine their married life as if they are in the base of a pyramid. And let's assume you have a pyramid and one is on one side of the pyramid, one is on the other side. If you simply try to bore through the base of a pyramid, you're not going to get through because it's stone, it's rock. There's no way of cutting through it to get to the other side, even though inside is empty, but you've got to drill through the wall. However, if both parties climb up the pyramid, because a pyramid narrows, when they reach the top, they're going to be together. And he says that sometimes, if we concentrate not on how do I get what I want, but how do I become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if each person looks at Avodas Hashem as the way that they reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then by definition, people who are committed to Avodas Hashem are going to come together as human beings as well, because they share those same goals, they share those same aspirations. You know, we have to know, once again, that Shalom Bayis is the institution and is the mechanism by which Hashem Shekhinah becomes Niskala in the world. Ish v'isha Shekhinah Shuriya Beinayim. This is the Mikdash that we have in our lives. And if we rededicate ourselves to these spiritual ideas of marriage, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the siyata d'shmaya, that we should be zocha not only to establish rivers, but also to be a kedera, and to ultimately achieve the level of the bird. I just want to say that it's very, very appropriate that if I end on this note of looking at a spiritual goal as bringing husband and wife together, I think a few words should certainly be said about the Vad Hachzakas HaTorah that we have here in Queens. An institution of a number of years already. I was surprised to hear that it's been going on for 13 years, but an institution in which men and women, husbands and wives, can get together on days in which we don't have the curse of Vizeya Safecha Tocha Lechem, We have to thank the secular calendar for that. Indeed, one has to be Makir Tov, even to that, to be able to get together to discuss important ideas of Yiddishkeit, to learn halacha, to talk about hashkafa, to talk about, to spend some time in Avodas Hashem. And I hope that this should be an experience that indeed increases the quality of all of our relationships. And the Vod is something that is very much deserving of all of our supports. And I hope that all of us will be able to support the Vod, both by coming to its shiurim and by providing whatever financial support that it requires. Thank you, and I wish you well. So.
We're going to daven mincha now. You're on. I'm going to bring some sidurim, which are out in the...